Justin, I went to the movies this week. Actually, I've been to the movies a lot. Whoa. I've been to the movies a lot.
I saw Thunderbolts.
I did see Thunderbolts.
You did?
Have you seen it?
No. Should I?
Absolutely.
Okay. I was waiting for the pause there.
I could not have had any less interest because I've just been out of Marvel. I've just been done.
Anything I've seen of Marvel has not been bad, but it's been like BC level.
It's been worse than bad. Yes, it's been just like boring.
Yeah, like it's like
just like uninteresting.
Yeah,
like
exactly. Like the quality, there's quality in terms of, like, it's not like a shit production. It's just not like good.
It's just like forgettable, bland. Yeah. I'll never think about it again.
Yep.
Like I can't even, like, I'm trying to picture in my mind what happens in the what's her name, Miss Marvel show. I watched almost all of it. I can't even. I just remember them like being like, it's like, looks like a CW show. You know what I mean? Just like,
yeah, they're running through the halls of the high school at the end, screaming at the top of their lungs.
Yeah. I don't remember the next line of the song, but I appreciate what you did there. It doesn't matter. What I'm saying, though, is couldn't have had any less interest, but we were celebrating my mom's birthday and Mother's Day this weekend, and so my brother was in town, and he was like, hey, we're going to go see Thunderbolts. You want to come?
Wait, that was this weekend?
I don't... Yeah, I think you missed my mom's birthday. You didn't text her or anything.
Oh, no, Mother's Day.
I'm kidding. No, it's next weekend.
Okay. I was like, oh, shit.
No, it is next weekend. It's this upcoming Sunday.
Happy birthday, Mrs. Patek.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. I'll let her know you said so.
Thank you.
But we went and saw it, and, like, the day before we saw it, I, like, looked up. I was like, is this reviewing well? Because, like, I'm always, like, interested in the trailers for these because the trailers are always good. But then, like, the movie comes out and just, like, it's like Rotten Tomatoes 40%. You're like, oh, shit. And, like, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, people really liked this in reviews. And it's not just the audience score, because the audience score for these things are always high. But it was like critic score, or whatever. And I don't always care about, like, what critics have to say about, like, popcorn action movies. They didn't like whatever that Fast and Furious movie I saw was, the spinoff with Hobbs and Shaw. You know, obviously critics aren't going to like that. But is that movie a good time? It absolutely is. Is the Meg gonna score well with critics? No, but Jason Statham fights a megalodon with a samurai sword, and that's a good movie.
I give that a 10.
Exactly. But it was like, oh, dang, critics like this. I walked out of Thunderbolts, and it was amazing.
No,
first of all,
amazing.
It was Justin, you know me, you know my taste, you know how I talk about things.
Yeah,
I loved it.
Like, what was the like closest quality good Marvel movie that you would connect it with?
I would say like a Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, dang. Okay.
And the reason why, there's two reasons why. The first is they do not do a single thing of the, like, multiverse interdimensional stuff that
Go
I just
figure.
Don't give a fuck about.
Go figure.
I, like, just don't care about that at all. But then also, I haven't cared about, like, any of the main characters of these movies, really. And, like, any time, like, looking forward to, like, Avengers, whatever the next, Doomsday. Like, well, who's the main character of this story anymore?
Tony Stark.
And it's, like back when it was Avengers Endgame and whatever, it was Captain America and Iron Man.
Yeah.
And they were interesting, and they had, like, you know, interpersonal stuff and all the other characters you liked, but you kind of,
you had the,
like,
main characters.
You watch those movies and then you have to have main characters to, like, push it all forward.
Yeah.
And with this, you have the main character is Black Widow's sister, Yelena is her name. And she's an incredible lead in this movie. Everyone else around her is awesome, but they're also, like, supplemental. Like, John Walker, like, the state issued Captain America is in it, and he's, like, such a piece of shit. But he, like, him, if I had to watch a whole movie about him, I'm like, eh, whatever. But, like, him just, like, being in this movie, I'm like, oh, I like him a lot in this. But have you seen any of the, like, the marketing stuff with Thunderbolts?
The only thing I know is that they're really pushing Florence Pugh hard. I've seen her, like, bend over a pole or something like that. Like, she, like, does, like, a thing. Like, she, like...
What do you mean?
How can I say this? She has a baton, and she basically, like, twists her body around that. I've seen that video.
in the movie? This
no,
happens?
It's like the PR stuff. It's just like her interviews.
Okay. Where she's like showing how flexible her arms are or whatever.
Yeah, I've seen that video.
I see what you're talking about
and
now.
I've seen her jumping off the tallest building and she didn't tell anyone because she didn't want them to be worried about it. Those are the two things I know about this movie.
Yes. Okay. They have, I'll say this, they have done a lot of, like, now that the movie's been out, they have spoiled kind of like the big reveal of the movie. You know how, like, by the time Endgame came out, like, eventually they were just like putting Captain America wielding the hammer in the trailers and stuff. Cause they're like, just come see this fucking movie. Like, it's crazy.
We don't bash it. Yeah.
They are kind of doing a similar thing with this movie. And I kind of love it because I've seen it at this point. But if I had not seen it, I would have like it. I would have been like, oh, does that kind of make sense?
Yeah. I have two questions for you. Is it
please?
Is it Florence Pugh doing a like a bendy thing over a baton
with a baton? It is not that. No.
OK, cool.
It just like it explains why it's like called Thunderbolts asterisk. Have you seen like that's what the title is? It's like Thunderbolts with an asterisk on it. And the whole time everyone's been like, what the fuck is this asterisk?
Yeah. Like just for the sake of I literally am not going to see this. Just say it and we'll bleep it out. I need to hear just what's the twist.
I mean, it's if you just like, Google this movie, it's not called Thunderbolts. The movie's called The New Avengers.
They're the Avengers?
Because how if you're not going to see it, spoilers for Thunderbolts. The ending of the movie is they're going to go kick Veep's ass. You know, the Julie Louis-Dreyfus. Because she set them up where she basically was going to have them all killed because they all were like mercenaries for her. And then she like sticks a supervillain on them. They're going to go fight her. But she tricks them into like being at like a press conference outside like the destruction of New York City. And then she's like, my plan the whole time, and she's obviously making this all up, is to introduce to you the New Avengers. And they're all just standing there like, what the fuck? And then that's it. That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Okay.
But now that I've seen it, I'm like, okay, actually Florence Pugh being the lead of this movie is awesome because she's great in it. And then if she continues to be the lead in whatever sort of big Avengers story stuff is moving forward, I'm like, okay, I actually like that a lot. So
is Bucky Barnes like the second? Because I always found him to be a good character.
He's good. Elena was talking to me about this. She's like, they're still just fucking bringing him out, huh? I was like, yeah. He's like, I mean, like, you know, he's been doing this for a long time. I think the movie would be stronger without him just because, like, you just don't need him anymore.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with him. Apparently, in the new Captain America movie, they made him a congressman.
Okay.
And it's funny because it's like, this guy was a brainwash, like, you know, obviously not his fault, but he was brainwashed for a secret Nazi organization for 60 years. And he just get elected, become an elected official after that. Is that not, is no one concerned?
If I was like working with him, I'd just say random Russian things to him to see if it like activated him.
Yeah. Just like notebook, Paragon. Is that 17 May?
I do that to Archie just in case he was trained to be a killer. I'll say like random German words to him, like Tuten.
Does it ever work?
Not once. One time it will.
I was gonna try and say anything in German, but I can't. Schnitzel, it's Hitbox. Everyone, welcome back to Hitbox episode number 241. My name is Peter Hunt Spitek. That was my review of Thunderbolts. Go see it. I liked it. In fact, I loved it, which is not something I feel a lot about Marvel movies as of late. There you go. Joining me as always is my wonderful friend and co-host Justin Makovich. Justin, you're at 112 hot dogs. I'm at 73 hot dogs. I had more bratwurst this weekend and I was fucking mad about it.
Yeah, I gotta admit, I only had 4 hot dogs this week because I had a bunch of leftover lunch meat that I was eating all week. So that kind of got in the way because I'm like, I can't let this lunch, like, like it's like I guess it's turning into a competition that you're clearly gonna win, but like it's
not a competition. It's just fun. Yeah, I just like that we're doing this.
But like we put the numbers next to each other, like I'm gonna be like, am I just gonna?
I see it as naturally... what do they say about like ships? Like rising tides.
Yeah, where rising tide raises all ships. Like
raises all you ships. Know what I
mean?
Yeah.
But
like iron sharpens iron, Justin. You make me want to eat more hot dogs.
But I came up with a plan this week to make sure that I make up for the sins of last week.
Please.
I'm going to go to the Kane County Cougars opening night on Thursday.
Yes, you are.
Where they have half price hot dogs, not even dollar dogs, half price dogs. And I'm going to bite the bullet and I'm going to go into nine, but we're going to see where I get when I buy two an inning.
You're just going straight into it, huh?
Well, my goal is I will buy two an inning and then I will eat those two in the inning, right? And if I get to inning four, we'll see how I'm doing.
That's eight. Yeah.
You know, and am I going to continue to do that kind of pace? Is it a comfortable pace? I've also been like eating really good recently and I've been like doing more running. So it's also a little bit scary to do more than nine.
Yeah.
Like nine is the number I'm like, I can
sacrifice.
You're gonna
have no problem
doing nine. Oh,
I think you're gonna have no problem.
No, I'll be fine. And if they have like the little condiments, you know, if they got a little bit extra zhuzh on them, those first couple, those will be fine. I'll have those ones practically naked, but as they start to get harder to get through, then I'll become more creative.
Yes.
You know what I mean? More creative with what I do. So yeah, I'm gonna go hard at the Kane County Cougars game. I'm going with our friend Sean, and I'm gonna make sure he joins me.
That's the other thing is when you go, you have to do it with someone because it's fun to like have the camaraderie of it. I told you about like I went with Elena's friends, and they were like, "We're gonna do it," and they all had two, and I was like, "This is
that's,
not now I look like
it.
A weirdo."
Yeah, that's not no. it. No, you don't do that.
No. So there you go. Justin, I would like to tell our listeners that they can join us on Discord. The link to that is in the description of this episode. They can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/hitboxpod by becoming a $1 podcast producer or a $3 deluxe podcast producer like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. Today, this week, we're talking about the age-old debate of can 100 men fight one gorilla to death? I have done a lot of research on this. I have, I'm going to pull up some studies. I think this is a topic of conversation that has been sort of taking the internet by storm. And Justin, I want to hear what you think about it.
I have a lot of asterisks. I have a lot of Thunderbolt asterisks by it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the whole, the whole conversation has to just be like, well, you know, if, but also, and we must consider, you know, these sorts of things. And I'm excited to sort of hear you out on that, because I think you're going to have a measured and nuanced take on this. And that's what I can always count on you to bring. So you can support us there if you're interested in hearing that. Otherwise, you can follow us on Blue Sky at Hitbox Pod or rate this episode in your podcast player of choice. Justin, here's a preview of what's coming up in the news. Xbox increases its prices by a lot. Gears of War is coming to PlayStation, and layoffs at Respawn means a canceled, unannounced Titanfall game. We're going to talk about those headlines and more. But before we do, will you join me in the Metacritic Roundup?
Let's go!
Metacritic Roundup.
It's a lie. There's nothing in the Metacritic Roundup this week.
What? You don't want to talk about Drop Duchy?
What is Drop Duchy, Justin? And how did it score?
It scored an 88 on the Metacritic. Drop Duchy, an 88. According to Game Grin, Drop Duchy feels like Tetris blended with a board game. You must be strategic with your placement. Just clearing lines won't be enough to ensure your victory. It's an 88 with 6 critic reviews. Drop Duchy.
Yeah. I'll say Revenge of the Savage Planet. It's scored an 80 on the PC, 77 on the PS5.
That sounds like
on
a good
X,
game.
Xbox One, PS4.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't play the original one. I think this is like coming off the heels of, I think the studio that made it made the original one for like Stadia or something. It was like backed by Google, and then they haven't done that, but I'm not particularly interested in that. I'll tell you this. This is true. I have a code for a game called Despelote, which I have
that,
not played.
That one currently, that speaking of, that was the next one I was going to mention. Despelote. It has a 91. Yeah, but
on the
yeah,
PC.
8 critic reviews and then 15 user reviews give it a 15 points lower. Not 15. It's a 6.5 according to those 15 users.
Yeah.
But a 91 based on 8 people. Eurogamer says Despelote's creators tell remarkable Pseudo autobiographical tale about football, Ecuador, and community, but also one about the act of remembering and the creative act itself.
And the reason I didn't want to bring this up is because apparently the game is about 2 hours to finish, and I have a copy of it, which means I want to finish it so I can just tell you about it, and we can sort of examine
about Despelote.
I also picked this up on Fantasy Critic, which by the way, obviously I have a code for it, but I did not review it, and I picked it up before I got it. So you know what I mean? Like,
hey, you know what?
No cheating here.
You don't have to justify yourself to me, at all.
I heard someone say that this game is going to review well, most likely. I heard them say it on Twitter, or on Blue Sky rather, which is a public platform, and this was before they had played it. And they also didn't even review it for their outlet. So yeah, I'm saying it's
hard to I'm sure it will review well, but right now with the 8 that are in there, it's like 2 have 100 and then other ones have like an 80. So it's like hard to say.
On OpenCritic, it is at like 82.
So it'll probably be mid 80s to low 80s, I would assume, yes, that's a fucking victory.
Well, I'll absolutely take it because it's the type of game that like it's short, but like. Kind of like high art, artsy,
yeah.
Which means that like, if you are looking for it, is this a really fun video game? Like, no, but like, it has like a lot of like Venba, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
is that game like a really fun video game? No, but like, it's not trying to be, you know? And so that's just going to land differently with different people. But we'll talk about it next week. I will hopefully have played it by then.
If I know this is like not to the date or anything like that, but Doom the Dark Ages, I believe review embargoes up on the 9th of May and the game comes out on the 15th.
Oh, so that's, I mean, coming up, 9th of May is
so we will Friday. Know next week of what the reviews are for it. And I will either tell you if I'm going to be excited to play it or not. And right now it's just not it for me. You know what I mean?
You're not a Doom guy though. I mean, I remember that you said this when Doom Eternal came out and you were like, I don't mean to upset anyone, but you were like, I felt embarrassed to play this game.
Just not me.
Just with the way that it is very like in your face and like
now,
very like.
What I think is going to be the thing that gets me about this game is the fact that you have the shield. I heard someone describe it as while Doom Eternal, the whole thing was about like being shifty and jumping around and avoiding things. Mm-hmm. This one's much more about standing your ground with big, strong weapons.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, that's a little bit more appealing to me. Because I don't feel like I have those kind of twitch reflexes, but I assure you there's going to be some twitch shit in this that I'm just not going to be able to do because I'm an old man.
Yeah. I have to imagine that. Yes, it is going to be, you know, it changes up like the way the offense is like viewed, but also like,
it's Doom.
It's going to have some of that DNA.
It's
yeah.
like rock, paper, scissors. That's what the game is. That's what it's like based off of. You kind of have to keep yes. that going somewhat. So that's why it'll be like one of those things I'll see, and I'll probably play it at some point. Just because I want to, like, I have the Game Pass. I might as well try it on to know what I like and at least play the opening part. But I am so, my backlog, buddy. Whew. I'm looking at what games you played this week. And I'm like, that's my backlog that I want to get to.
Yeah.
They're downloaded. I'm ready for it.
It's big games.
Yeah.
It's big games.
Yeah.
So, I mean, let's just get into it here. I've played a lot more Clair Obscur Expedition 33. Without spoiling anything, that game goes some places. Oh boy, does that game go some places. And I find it to be very interesting.
And like good, though.
I think it's good. I think that it is going to turn some people off.
Oh.
I like what... you know this about me. I like when a game is weird. I like a weird game.
Mm-hmm.
People love this game. But it takes some twists. There's a very big twist... that sort of happens midway through. There's several twists, but I've not gotten to the end, but I had to edit an article today and someone was like, hey, like I wrote like about the very, very ending of Clair Obscur. Can someone just edit this? And no one wanted to, cause they were all like very worried about spoilers. And I was like, you know what? I will do it. And then I read it and I was like, wow, that's crazy. That's good. This game's it's crazy. I can see you vigorously Googling.
Yeah, I'm looking here. I don't want to say this correctly. I should have saved it. I think it was Paul Tassi who tweeted, how some of the combat scaling of the game made the painter fight unfun. And people were railing on him for that.
So here's the deal. Here's the deal about this game. I like this game a lot. I would heartily recommend this to anyone. However, to me, the reason why, like, I am trying to play, like, obviously this isn't a JRPG. This is an FRPG.
Fuck you. Role-playing game.
Yes, exactly.
It's a fucking role-playing game.
Yeah, man. You see that guy talking about, like my, he's like, my accent, like, got me in trouble in school. He's, like, from, like, Brooklyn or something. Because they were talking about the Falkland Islands, which is, like F-A-U-L-K or whatever. He's like, I know they're about the fucking island. Anyway, it doesn't matter. This is obviously not a JRPG, but it is inspired by those games. And so, like, if you, so, like, the common adage is like, okay, well, if you like, you know, Final Fantasy, you will like Clair Obscur. And I think that is largely true. However, for me, I go to something like Final Fantasy, and not the newer ones, right? The older ones that are like strictly turn based, because I want a break from real time action.
Mm-hmm.
This game you will not be able to complete unless you can get down parrying,
mm-hmm.
which, like, that's fine. I like that. I don't mind it, but it does mean that, like, I can totally see how this will not land with someone if they are not interested in getting good at parrying.
Peter, my question.
Yes.
Will Mr. Makovich over here like this game still?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
I think you're going to like the, like, for me, I love the combat systems. Every character has their own combat system, and I like them all a lot. I particularly like Mael. Mael is, she has a sword, like a rapier, and she has basically three different combat stances. And when she uses her skills, it tells you what combat stance it's going to end you in. You can either be in, like, attack mode, which you deal 50% more damage, but you also take 50% more damage. You can be in defense mode, which reduces the damage you take, or you can be in, like, there's another one where it, like, increases damage by 200%, but it's also, like, there's, like, give and take to it. I fucking love that kind of, like, puzzle combat stuff. It's, like, really, really, like, active in terms of, like, the systems, but it also is, like I said, you just have to parry. And if you can't get down the timing of these enemies, then, like, you're going to have a bad time. And also, I wrote an article about this on thegamer.com about, I wish this game had the Metaphor ReFantazio restart battle system. Mm,
I love that so much, man.
It's so good because this game requires practice. Like, if you're fighting a boss, like, a lot of the mini, like, the side bosses will kill your character in one hit if you mess up. And so if you fuck up and it's like, okay, well, now I have to wait for them to kill me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm either going to just, like, fight a losing battle and just, like, I guess just practice this whole time. But, like, if you die, then it's like, okay, sent back to the checkpoint. Got to go find the boss again. Like, it's just a little clunky. And so if you are having a hard time with the parrying stuff, it just makes the game feel a little bit, like, slower, you know? But I like it a lot. I think you'll like it a lot. I don't think it's that punishing, but I do think it is one of those things where, like I said, you just have to get on board with the parrying. Otherwise, you're just not going to like this game.
Also, are you upset with the fact that someone said you fight the Paintress at the end of this game, where the whole goal is for you to stop the Paintress from killing everyone?
Like, is that a spoiler?
Yeah, going back, like, Paul Tassi tweeted that he's having trouble fighting it, and then people were, like, literally railing on him because they said
people
it was a spoiler,
so
dude.
People are so fucking dumb when they're like at the beginning of the game where they're like, it's time for us to go fight and kill the Paintress. And it's like, yeah, that's like,
yeah,
that is going to happen in some way or another. Yeah, you know what I mean?
He literally goes, I'm avoiding spoilers about the game as much as anyone, but if you're complaining about this, I refuse to believe you even turned on the game.
No, that's so real. At TG, when I was doing the video stuff, people were mad at one of our editors for talking about the initial premise of, not It Takes Two. Split Fiction. It like it's the premise of the game, guys.
You gotta know it. Like as part of it.
Like I'm sorry, you just like it's not a spoiler. My thing is like if you want to go into a game completely blind, and like if you think the inciting incident of a story of a game is like a spoiler, then that's on you for even seeking out that media. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yeah. Hashtag Thunderbolts. No, Thunderbolts asterisk.
Right. But then that's the thing with that thing. It's like, yo, that movie's been out for like not even a week. You know, like I get like in the height of Endgame, in the height of the MCU, like, you know, people are going to see it opening weekend. I don't know. Maybe it's a ploy to get people to come see it, to be like, I was going to watch this. And then I'm like, oh, wait, it's the new Avengers. And then you like look at reviews and you're like, oh, it's pretty good. And then you hear Hitbox and you're like, Peter never loves anything.
I guess we're going. Thunderbolts. And then yeah. They hear us talk about the Painters and like, fuck you guys.
Clair Obscur, though, I like it a lot. It's on, it, you know, you have it on Game Pass, right? Like,
yeah, it's down. It's also, so my order right now is I'm going to beat South of Midnight. I'm going to play Oblivion for about 2 hours, and then I'm going to play Clair Obscur to completion.
I think that is the way to go. Because Clair Obscur is also not that long, to my understanding. It's like 30 to 40 hours. Obviously, there's like side stuff to do if you want to really, you know, spend all your time. But like, the game makes it very clear, like, here's where to go next. And all those other areas are totally optional. So I've been doing some of those as I've found them, but also like it doesn't, you know, I'm not like breaking my back to like make sure I go and do all of them. I'm liking it immensely. Like I said, some twists I think are interesting. And I like a game. Well, then that's, here's the other part. Like, is it a spoiler to say that there is a twist, that there are twists? No, it's just like, how about this? What if instead of saying twists, I say narrative beats?
It's a good video games or good storytelling is about not just doing the obvious thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
some unexpected things happen.
You kind of like, want that to happen.
Well, now I know that something unexpected happens. Fuck you.
Yeah. Get out of here.
I like the narrative beats, and a narrative beat happened and it made me go, I have no idea where this is going. Which I like, you know what I mean? Like, cause you know, you sort of like, you understand like the premise of the game and you're like, all right, sure. You know, we're going to go find the Patriots, whatever, and kill her. And then something happened and I'm like, I don't know what is going to happen now. I have no idea. Like, you know, it's all kind of out the window now. And I think that's cool. Clair Obscur Expedition 33. The other game I've been playing, Justin, is Oblivion Remastered. I would like to point out again, as we pointed out last week, Microsoft and Xbox specifically are still a part of the BDS boycott. We're going to be donating again to Heal Palestine as a way of you know, putting some good out in the world amidst the boycott and all that. I've been playing more Oblivion, and I've put about equal time between Oblivion and Clair Obscur. You said you haven't touched it, right?
Mm-mm. No.
The more I play this game, the more I am baffled by people who think this is a remake. And I will be curious to hear your thoughts on this when you play it, because it's just like so clear that this is just an old game that has has some nice looking graphics attached to it, some good lighting. But
is this game anywhere near as good as Skyrim?
I don't, like, it's been a long time since I've played Skyrim.
Mm-hmm.
The last time I did a playthrough of Skyrim was in college, and I like Skyrim a lot. I think it is. I love the storytelling in this, and like the thing that I really appreciate about Skyrim that I don't like in this, and I think we talked about this last week, is the dungeons and the caves in this game suck, where you will just like go through a dungeon or a cave, kill a bunch of guys, and then like you might find a treasure chest at the end of the cave. You oftentimes do not. Like, you just like walk through and you're like, what was the point of that? I just came here, just killed a bunch of guys who were just minding their business. Like, you know, they were raiders, whatever, they were bandits, but like they weren't bothering me. I just showed up and just killed all these guys in their home, and there's not even like a treasure. And then what you have to do is like just turn around and walk out the way you came, like in silence. You know what I mean? Whereas in Skyrim, they like have a pretty good system of like looping you back around to like back to the entrance, whatever.
Exit, yeah.
and having there be something in every cave, whatever. So like in that area, like I think Skyrim is way better. I like the story of both of these games a lot. I like the quests in these games a lot. I remember really liking the Dark Brotherhood quest line in Skyrim, and the Mages Guild quest in Skyrim for that matter. I'm currently doing the Thieves Guild stuff in Oblivion, which, by the way, pro tip for you. If you're doing the Thieves Guild quest in the first quest, the first part of the quest, you can buy lockpicks from the guy who's like sort of proctoring an exam for 5 gold each. I bought 1,000 lockpicks because I was like, there will never be a better way for me to spend my money in this game than to just have
1,000 lockpicks. Because if I'm correct, the lockpicking in the game is like not the best or not the easiest.
It's just like it is a mini game, and a lot of people don't seem to like it because it's like just I don't know. I like it. I don't mind it.
Okay.
But I'm also like, it's hard for me to say because I'm like, I've just played a lot of Oblivion. You know what I mean? In my youth, so I don't really mind it. Also, here's a tip: you want to level up lockpicking. If you just mash the X button or the A button, depending on what you're playing, while the lockpicking menu is open, that counts as attempting to do it, and you can just infinitely level up lockpicking with any lock.
Oh. Okay.
So,
any other tips? Can you pet the Khajiit?
I ran into Maik the Liar.
Okay.
He was sprinting away from something, and I was like, hey, man, what's up? And then he had nothing to say to me. It was just like rumors. And he's like, I heard the Fighters Guild is recruiting new members.
When you ran up to him, did he like turn to you, stop his sprint, say that, and then when you're done with him, continue the sprint?
Yes.
Ah, classic. I love this game.
That's the thing. It's like, I like that this is a remaster and not a remake, because if you remade this, do you just take all that out? You know what I mean? Because like technically that's like not good design, right? Like it's very jarring and weird. But like it's fun, you know? So I don't know. I like Oblivion a lot. But this is a fresh coat of paint on a game from 2006. Mm. And for me, someone who has nostalgia for this game, I love it. And someone who like remembers a lot of things about this game, I love it. I don't know, like it seems like it is performing well. Let me take a look here. Matt Piscatella said on Blue Sky, after just 1 week on the market with, I don't know what this next bit means, whatever. Elder Scrolls Oblivion Remastered is already the third best-selling game of 2025 in the U.S., trailing only behind Monster Hunter Wilds and Assassin's Creed Shadows. It was the best-selling game of the week, and that is from Matt Piscatella, industry analyst. So, like, I think it's going over well with people who do not have the relationship I have with Oblivion. And I'm happy because I think that's fun. And I like that about, I like to hear that people are like willing to engage with a game that is a little old and like showing its age in a major way.
Peter, if they would do this with Fallout 3, can you imagine?
Spoilers. Apparently that's what they're doing.
Oh, good. Cause like I don't have very fond memories of Oblivion. And it's just because I was a huge Morrowind fan. Oblivion came out. I played a little after the fact. I felt it was a little like shallow. Then Skyrim came along and I fucking love Skyrim.
Yeah.
But like if they did this to a game like Fallout 3, which feels old when you play it nowadays.
Yeah, that game did not
age.
It's funny. Like Oblivion is older than Fallout, but I feel like, and this might just be my, you know, my nostalgia brain looking at it, I feel like Fallout 3 plays way worse than Oblivion.
Yeah. And if they just do a few things to fix that game, like, we're talking about remaster fixes.
Yes.
Not remake fixes.
100%. Remaster.
Like,
yep.
I that will be an amazing game. Like, coming out of the vault, what vault is it? Whatever vault you're in. Coming out of that vault 101?
It's something goofy
like that. But like seeing like that first view of the wasteland, but in like HD, 4K, ray tracing.
Yeah. Oh.
Liam Neeson. I mean,
that's the thing. Like Oblivion looks great.
Yeah.
Like, it looks really, really good. I like it. I'm having a good time with it. I 100% understand if people bounce off it because it is just an old game, you know? But like I said, it makes me happy though to see that people are willing to give it the time of day, because we've talked about this. I mean, like, obviously we say at the end of every episode, like, old games are old, but like, sometimes I get frustrated that people are uninterested in like engaging with, I really liked the Resident Evil 1, like, HD remake that they have on like the PlayStation Store. I played it like 2 years ago. I think we talked about it on here. If I played a video game while we've been doing the show, you heard about it.
Unless you're holding out that you've been playing Red Dead 2 for the past year.
I've just been secretly doing it. Yeah. In playing that, I had such a good time with it, and it made me so depressed because I was like, eventually they're going to remake this game. And it makes me sad because like, it doesn't need it. It just doesn't play like the Resident Evil 2, 3, 4 remakes, you know? It's just, it's a different set of skills, and it just is a different kind of game. And it's the kind of game that isn't really made anymore, because audiences just, I think, just need a certain kind of thing for them to feel like a game is a game. Does that make sense?
I mean, this could be a broader conversation too, because like, I think we are kind of in a different level of this, like, because I personally think that in most cases, the most recent version of a game is going to be the one that I would recommend more people play.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And like, yeah, we're going, like, I think Resident Evil is that perfect example, because I cannot think, like, I would say you got to play Resident Evil 4 remake. You got to play Resident Evil 2 remake. Is it called remake? Resident Evil 2, whatever, the remake. You got to play the 3, remake, right? Yeah. If you're going to play those. And like, the old ones are there as like a snapshot in time of what games were. And that's not a bad thing. I'm not saying that those things are like bad. Old games are literally
They are old. Yes. Yeah. And there is like old design 100%.
Yeah. I will spend money on the Fallout 3 remaster.
Yeah. I mean that's the thing. I think that's an easy win for them.
Even if it's on Game Pass, I'll play that shit on my portal. That's not something I'm going to play on my backbone. By the way, I had this moment. If I get a new iPhone, I got to get a new backbone.
Is that true? Oh, because of the USB-C?
Cuz of the new thing.
Yeah.
Like, what am I going to do?
I mean, I will give you this. This is not the backbone. What?
It's not.
This is the Razer something. I got this when Honkai Star Rail came out, because I was like trying to diversify my, because I was a freelancer and I was like, I should keep up with a live service game.
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be good for my job and for like, you know, just,
have you heard of in Fortnite? Terms of
getting work. You know, I don't know why I was like, I have followed a live, like, why learn a full brand new live service game? I'm like, I am like deep. I was deep in the trenches. I put 250 hours into Apex. You know what I mean? Like, I played a lot of that game.
Yeah.
Like, why don't I find like a live service game that I like give a shit about? But so I bought this when that game came out on mobile, and then because I think it was delayed, the PS5 version of it, and then I put my phone in it, and it was like, hey, controller support is not supported yet for an undisclosed amount of time. And so I just bought this. I've literally never used it.
Yeah.
So should you be interested in a USB-C phone controller?
All right,
I'll
reach out to you when my iPhone dies.
You know where to find me.
Yeah.
Oblivion Remastered. Like, I'm having a good time with it. I like Oblivion. I like the ways in which it is broken and busted. Like, you know, here's a tip. If you're going to play this, jump everywhere. While you are traveling, jump. Have you heard of this?
I learned that in Morrowind, like, man.
Yeah. You upgrade your athletic skills.
Just keep
casting
whatever spell you have, too. Just do whatever you got. There's not a free moment in that game. Always do something. You're always be doing.
Yes, 100%. It's just a great way to like just like level up all your skills and all that sort of stuff. So there you go, Justin. There's been a fair amount of Xbox news. Gears of War Reloaded is coming. This is a remaster. It's going to have 4K resolution, 120 FPS. Revamped multiplayer, which is cool because a lot of these remastered, you know, editions of games like just don't do multiplayer. So I think this is kind of cool. This is, I believe, just the first game, if I'm not mistaken here. But the big thing about, and they like, you know, they redid all the textures and stuff like that, I think, just so that it's remastered for these things. But the big sort of like news bit of this is releasing on the Xbox, the personal computer, and the PlayStation 5 on August 26th. So this is the first, Gears of War is coming to PlayStation, and that's kind of a big deal.
It's pretty cool.
I think that's cool. A lot of people are very upset about this.
Go get over it.
Because who cares? I mean, we've talked about this to death, right? But I'm kind of like, guys, Gears of War is from what, 2007? Like, when did that first game come out?
2006, same year as Oblivion, my friend.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Those are two very different 2006 games, aren't they?
And because here's the funny thing about that. Yeah. I actually think the original game still looks pretty good today.
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like,
that's what I mean. Like,
seeing the two comparisons to them, like, I'm not an idiot. They look better. I would recommend people play this new one over the old one any day of the week. But, like, that old game, it didn't look that old.
That's all right. Yeah.
Looked pretty good.
It's a very different 2006 game, isn't it?
Oh,
like, when you look at old Oblivion, you're like, oh, no, the adoring fan. Like, what's wrong with your face? Yeah, people are upset about this. I don't give a fuck. And we've talked about this. Like, it's a great model. Like, more people get to play games. Like, Halo Infinite's going to be... Like, the Halo Master Chief Collection is going to come to PlayStation. And I think that's cool.
I don't want it
And when
man.
It does... When it does, I'll probably play it.
I want it on my Switch, too.
If I can get a copy of it... Dude, that would actually be so sick.
Like, that is the place to play the Halo Master Chief Collection.
I have been thinking about... Okay, when the Switch 2 comes out, and it is delivered to my house... While I'm in fucking LA for Summer Game Fest, what am I going to play on this? So obviously Mario Kart, but then I was looking, I was like, I think I would love to play Elden Ring on the Switch. I think that's a perfect playing game. Like, it's just a perfect, like, I'm just going to lay in bed while Elena's going to sleep.
Dude, that's how I played it. I played it on my Portal, right?
Oh yeah, exactly.
Like, perfect place.
And you know, not, it doesn't need to be like played to like completion exactly, but just like, let me fuck around with like a different build that I've never tried out before. Let me do a magic, you know, run. Like, let's see. So there's that. And then I was also looking, I was like, you know, will I like Cyberpunk on the Switch? The answer is no. I tried to play it. You remember like last year or 2 years ago when the Phantom Liberty DLC came out, and I was like, this, you know, they fixed a lot about this game. It is not better. The game wise, I like the writing okay. Mixed on the writing, but I don't know. I'm trying to think about like what will I play on the Switch 2?
That was the most 78 review I've ever heard of that game.
Yeah, some good, some bad. Some things I remember fondly about the game, and then I was saying that, I was like remembering like how big of a douchebag V just sounds like at the beginning of that game. It's just like, just can't stand him at all. And then I was thinking about like, oh, and the gunplay in that game sucks. I was just thinking about like where I left it, and I was like, and why I left it. And I was like, yeah, a lot of things I don't like about that game, but some good. There's some good stuff. I like Jackie Wells. I think what a nice guy. What a stand up guy. I like Johnny Silverhand is a very good character. I think
very good character. Yeah.
You know, there's things about it I like.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would give it 7 out of 10.
7 out of 10. I would give that almost a 9 out of 10.
You would give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
That's interesting. I would try to go for different endings. I don't remember what ending I got, but I remember being like, all right, sure.
I feel like
it was way shorter than I remember it.
I feel like I would say I would go for different endings, but then at the same time, I would make the right choices again.
I always do the same
really
thing.
Hard to be
every
an asshole.
Time.
Really hard to be a bad guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I also think I did all the endings, like I saved before it so I could see as many of the endings, the immediate as I could.
Oh, yeah, we both did that, and then we didn't do them.
Yeah.
But yeah, Gears of War Reloaded. I mean, dude, you're so right, though. I would play the fuck out of Halo Master Chief Collection on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
I would play through the whole trilogy.
Oh, easily. That's like the perfect Switch game to do. Now, granted, I'm hoping the joysticks are a little bit better on the new Switch, that I don't like to cry about it. But like, it doesn't matter because I would still suffer to play that game because, geez, nothing feels quite like the original Halo. Halo 2
and I know it
feels even better, though. You know what I mean?
I mean, I know it like technically does not hold up at all. Like, I think that Halo has aged like milk, but because I think like something aging bad doesn't like, you are immune to it a little bit if you have the nostalgia of having played it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like, it's impossible for me to be like, obviously it can't be objective, but like impossible for me to like be as objective as I can with Halo, because I'm like, I remember like every single part of this game.
But I don't care, because as you are on the Warthog, as the Pillar of Autumn is exploding, and that's that whole part's playing. Dude, I don't care. I don't care where you are in life.
This
no.
is Foehammer. Like, come on now.
Because
like,
doesn't the music start after Foehammer explodes, right?
Yes, because you're going to get picked up. And
yeah.
then,
and then you do that final one as you're going to the end. Woo!
Come on now.
Not a better
and then
moment.
Halo 2, he's like, Master Chief, what are you doing? I'm giving the Covenant back their bomb. Shit, dude, come on now. It's badass. It's good. It's so good. And have you played the Master Chief Collection version of those, the anniversary editions of those?
I went all the way through Halo 1. Yeah. And let me tell you, I played that last moment in the old graphics because I prefer that much more.
It's sick.
It's much better.
Yeah. I do too. I prefer the old. On Halo 1, I do. And then Halo 2. That game looks fucking amazing.
Yeah, I mean, that game looks modern-ish. So then I played, I didn't get to the end of Halo 2. I went through a little bit and I'm like, oh, okay, this game, this is not quite the same story.
What a cool idea though, where they're just like, half of it's you're the Arbiter.
Yeah.
It was a cool idea.
Yeah.
I like that. Anyway, Xbox. They also announced this week that they are raising the prices of their games, of their first party games, to $80. Not right now, but for holiday 2025. Additionally, they have increased their prices for all of their hardware. And I'm going to be honest with you. It's bad. It's really bad. I'm going to just read you down the list here. Going forward, here are the expected prices on various Xbox consoles and accessories in the U.S. The Xbox Series S, the base model, is $380, up from $300. The Xbox Series S one terabyte model is $430, up from $350. That's an $80 price increase on that. The Xbox Series X digital was $450 and is now $550. The Xbox Series X, the base model, the one that you and I both bought for $500 at launch, is now $600. And the 2 terabyte, the Galaxy colored one, has been increased from $600 to $730. That's $130 increase. The other ones are just $100. And then all of their other hardware, their headsets and their controllers and all that is getting a bump as well. I wrote something. Let me actually read you this statement. This is from IGN. They sent the statement to IGN. We understand that these changes are challenging and they were made with careful consideration, given market conditions and the rising cost of development. Looking ahead, we continue to focus on offering more ways to play more games across any screen and ensuring the value for Xbox players. I wrote this week about the Xbox Series X and the Xbox Series S, and that Xbox has demolished the value of the Xbox Series S. There is no reason to purchase one. If it is $400 plus with tax and everything, no reason to pick up an Xbox Series S, because you can get a base model PS5, usually in a bundle. I found one on Walmart. PS5 and Astrobot together, $402. Why would you get an Xbox Series S, a criminally underpowered machine? And because people would say like, oh, well, it's for Game Pass, right? It's a great Game Pass machine. Yeah, but it's expensive. It used to be like, this is a great option if you're, you know, gaming on a budget. Not anymore. Buy a PS5. It's the same price and it's better hardware. And then I wrote about the Xbox Series X, saying it's not worth $600. It's definitely not fucking worth $730. Like, at all. 5-year-old hardware is not worth $700. This is more expensive than the PlayStation 5 Pro, which I think puts that into perspective. And now, obviously, PlayStation has not increased their prices
yet
across the board. However, that's just the fact of the reality where we're at right now. Justin, what do you think about all this?
Dude, this is, if Nintendo wasn't the canary in the coal mine, this is... I think this is the start of video games becoming less and less affordable for us. I think we better count our lucky stars that we were able to pre-order the Switch 2 for what we did. And I just think that this is going to be something that is going to just be more and more and more expensive in the coming months. As this trade war stuff keeps going on, I already know that it was a lot, it was hard and difficult at times to get these parts. Like, think about when demand was exceptionally high during COVID, how much graphics cards went up and how much these things were more expensive. And now if those prices haven't gone back down to normal, Peter, they were still ridiculous and they still are ridiculous. And now you're going to be adding all this other stuff on top of it. I mean, I don't necessarily look at this as Xbox necessarily saying, like, trying to money grub here to a certain point. I think this is what part of the standard of the industry is going to be. And I don't think it's just going to be them that raises their prices. I think everything is going to start trickling down. Now, they look bad right now because they are doing it with all of their things. And even Nintendo, when they came out with their price raises to a point, clearly they were trying to mitigate for these potential tariff issues and things like that. They weren't as drastic as this kind of stuff. Sony already raised its prices.
Yes. No, you're totally right. Like, the PlayStation 5 has had a price increase in different
other places,
areas, right?
Just not in the US.
Not across the board. And also the price increase. Here's the thing. Like, there's a difference between raising your flagship model, the PlayStation 5, the Xbox Series X. Those are the flagship models. The PlayStation 5 was either 70 or it was like it translated because it was different currencies, right? It was between $60 and $80 increase. That is a different bit of PR than raising your consoles by $100 and $130 of your flagship models, right? Like, that's rough, man, first of all. Second of all, exactly to your point about, like, you know, Nintendo obviously sort of broke the seal on this, but I think the difference between Xbox and Nintendo, and I know this, like, sounds like a semantic thing, but I think it is, like, a small thing, but, like, I think it is important, is, like, yeah, but Xbox is not making Nintendo-quality games. Right. Like, you know, they do have good games. I'm not saying that they don't, but I am saying, like, they do not have the pedigree to say our games are worth $80. When I think about it, I'm talking about, like, value. Right. And a value proposition is different for every single person. I'm saying there's a very big with this whole conversation is to me. Right. To me, is a game like Tears of the Kingdom worth $80?
Yes.
Yes. To me, it is. It is a game of extraordinarily high quality for me that I played for 100 hours. I would say, yeah, okay, Tears of the Kingdom is worth $80. I'm glad it wasn't. It was $70, right? So almost. But, like, when they said, hey, we are charging $70 for Tears of the Kingdom, I was like, you know what? That makes sense. I get it. What does Xbox have for this year? We don't know, for their holiday lineup, right? But, like, let's say, like, Forza Horizon 5. To me, is that game worth $80? It is not. I've heard it's great. I've heard, you know, and again, to me, some people might say yes. But for me, it is not worth that money. And so I think that, like, Nintendo can get away with it to a certain extent because they have the pedigree. They have the ability to say, like, we make some of the best games ever made, and we are continuing to make some of the best games ever made. Xbox isn't there right now. You know? And I think this is kind of, you're right, this is going to set the standard for everyone else, because I think everyone else in the industry was looking around like, well, who's going to be the first one to do it? And Xbox was like, we'll do it. I don't know why, because they built their brand for the past, like, 5 years. I'm like, we're just your friend. We're Xbox. We're your buddy. And then, like, have just, like, absolutely torn all of that away in the last, like, 18 months. But I will push back a little bit on something you said about, like, you know, I do think this is them trying to raise prices and nickel and dime people. I do. And I think several things can be true at once. Yes, they have been dealt a bad hand in terms of tariffs and production costs and things like that in the current market. It is true that economically, obviously you and I, the little guys, are struggling, but corporations are struggling as well. I think they should consider how they can mitigate that struggle and where they should cut corners and figure out how to make that money back. To me, I look at this as, like, okay, now I'm subsidizing your company for making the choices that you've made. And we've talked about that with if GTA 6 is $100, you know, in the box, like, I didn't choose for your budget to be like that. You know what I mean? I didn't choose for these sorts of things. I think it is true that they are, you know, obviously struggling, hit with tariffs, hit with all these sorts of production issues. But I also think that they are looking for any opportunity they can to say, we have to raise prices, you know, because they say rising cost of development. That is not a statement about tariffs, right? That is development of games and things like that. So I think that they are absolutely blaming and taking advantage of this situation to say we're raising our prices. There is some truth to it. And there's also some, I think, deception going on a little bit as well.
And I also think, too, like, the cost of development makes me think something else about all of this stuff, specifically with the game side of things. What do they want you to do? Do they want you to spend $80 on Indiana Jones? Or do they want you to subscribe for a year of Game Pass at $120? Like, what are they trying to make you go towards? So by raising that stuff, it automatically incentivizes you to get the Game Pass model, which, again, I think it still looks expensive, an expense. It's still the best deal in video games. But, like, it really does further you needing to get Game Pass to play all these games, because I don't believe that all of their games are going to be worth $80.
Was Indiana Jones worth $80 to you?
I would not have bought it, probably.
Me neither.
Right.
Like at all.
And probably for different reasons, because I don't necessarily associate that with the quality of the game necessarily. Like, I think it was a good game. I know you didn't think it was a good game, but like.
But even leading up to it,
yeah.
Like, having not played it, would I have bought it for $80? Fuck no.
Right. And I don't know if I would have bought it even if it wasn't $80, to be honest, just because the kind of like the reason I played that, because it was on Game Pass. I had it and then I was going to play it and stuff like that. But then you put $80 on it. That's not a game I circled on the calendar to be like, this is the game that I'm going to be spending
for me in December
yes. at $80. It was there and I played it, but like, that's a very different like experiment for like prices and stuff like that. I think the thing that you bring up that's also like an important thing is who the hell is going to buy the Xbox Series S anymore?
It's they made a budget friendly console. I wrote about this and I said, like, I used to, if someone asked me if they were trying to get into video games or they're trying to get, like, you know, I want to get my kid a game console, what do I get them? It used to be the Switch. Get them a Switch. And it's still, like that was always, like, one of the things. But it was, like, depending on who they were, I would have absolutely said, you know what? Get an Xbox Series S and Game Pass. A lot of good stuff on there. And for the price of about the same as the Switch, like, a lot of games, a lot of good stuff there. Now, do anything else, buy a used Series X, you know, like what, like this is a bad deal.
I think it's like, who would buy it? But it's still the cheapest console on the market now. Like, well, I guess PlayStation
for the
still
PS5
cheaper. Yeah,
yeah, you know what I mean, like of a similar price. And for me, I'm also like, okay, even if it is the cheapest thing in the market, let's say there's $100 difference between there never is, because the PlayStation 5 is on sale, right? Because it's an old console. But like, let's say you can get it on, you're not getting it on sale. The PS5 is $500 right now. And the Xbox Series S is $400 with tax for the lower model one. But if you want the terabyte, it's 430 plus tax. So it's like 450. Just save a little bit more. You know what I mean? Just wait a little bit more and save a little bit more, and you are going to have a vastly better experience.
Yeah, it's almost to a point, like, we're not talking about $1,000 versus $200.
Correct.
Because those are like two different like
very
amounts
different
of saving, right? $200 yes. versus $400 even, you know what I mean? Like,
that's a lot. That's a big difference.
Yeah, $200 versus $300, you know, like at a certain point, you're not like, it's like a whole different thing. Like it like becomes right. they're close enough that you can wait a little bit to get what you want. So, but yes. Again, I envision this more is going to start being more expensive. Sony games are going to be more expensive.
Yes,
Sony's going to be more expensive. Nintendo's already
going
to
raise
expensive.
Their prices.
Everything is going to start to be more expensive. So right now, what looks like not a good deal maybe will look good. Hopefully not.
a few things. So first of all, I think PlayStation. So obviously, PlayStation is going to raise the price of the PS5 across the board.
I would be.
I hope they do, but they're like, and it's going to be raised by $5, and $60. They just flip off.
Yeah, sure. But so obviously they're going to raise prices. I think Nintendo, like, you know, we were talking about, like, okay, they make games of a high quality, so like it is like more worth it in terms of like people are like a lot are willing to swallow that pill a little bit more. Yeah, obviously no one's happy about it, but it is like, well, Breath of the Wild, you know what I mean? Like, fuck, it's a good game. Okay, fine. But I think that they kind of are in a much better place as well, because the Switch 2 is a new console. They're not raising the price of their old consoles yet. Maybe, who knows? They might. But like, do you know what I mean? Like Xbox, this is bad PR, because it's like, okay, well, this, Justin, the Xbox Series X's that we own, that we bought for $500, just went up in value. You and I saved $200 total between two Xboxes, right?
I can make money.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like, okay, damn, I got to flip this thing. You know what I mean? Like, so there's that one. And then two, I think Jeff Grubb made a point about this, which we'll talk about him in a second. But Xbox, I think, is willing and admitting now, like, we have no interest in selling consoles to new people.
I agree. And you add the Gears of War news on top of that too. You know what I mean?
Yes. Like, why would you buy an Xbox at this point? Just because it's like, they're too expensive. The PlayStation 5 is cheaper for now. And like, who that is does not own an Xbox, that is not a console gamer, is going to look at these prices and be like, you know what, let me get into this. For a brisk, because then also in the article that I wrote is like, you are not just buying a console. You have to buy the games, or you have to buy Game Pass or something like that. So like, if you're buying an Xbox Series X at $600, it is easily $750. And then if you're buying the one with all the storage, that's $900 to play some video games. Are you out of your mind? You know, like it is a lot of money. And it's like, why would you do this if you don't play games?
I just want to remind everyone that Google Stadia worked, and it worked well.
It did. It did work well.
And I say that because ain't that the future of Xbox that we're going towards?
100%.
So
100%. Justin, let's quickly talk about Marathon. Marathon has been in an alpha, like a closed alpha, test, and the people who've played it have not had a lot of positive things to say. Paul Tassi is someone I look to for any Bungie news, because he's deep into Destiny, he has had almost exclusively negative things to say about this alpha, which is a little tough. Obviously, it's, you know, it's not a finished game, but alpha, like the word alpha, has like marketing the word alpha means if a game is in alpha and you are letting people play it, that is a marketing term. That is not what an alpha of a game is anymore, right? If it is a true alpha, then maybe there's time to switch things around. It seems like the shooting is fine enough, but like the world is not that good. Like there's just not a lot to see in the game, and like the promise of like, oh, but you know, it's three times bigger than this. For, you know, a $40 game or $50 game or whatever, like people are saying like, yeah, but that's not like, I'm imagining three times this, and it's like still not that much, you know? Paul Tassi tweeted 2 days ago saying, I'm not trying to be mean, but how do you do a server stress test with 1,000 concurrent PC players? Just saying like, there's just not a lot of people who are logging in to play this thing right now. Someone commented saying, this is a terrible look, and if they're not freaking out right now, they should be. They're releasing codes daily and no one is going back in to play it. I would guess their unique player count is pretty one-sided for returning players, and it's just a screenshot of the Steam chart and all-time peak of almost 7,000 players. Wait, 24 hour peak. 6,900. Yes, yeah, I apologize for breezing over that. Sorry, 24 hour peak of, yes, Paul Tassi says 1,142 players. That is not enough people to test your servers. I think the trailers looked kind of cool. I'm not completely sold on the idea that this game is going to be trash yet. There's still time, but it is not instilling a lot of confidence in me. I'm waiting for an open beta in the way that they did Concord for me to give it a shot and see if this is worth my time and money. and also if I should drop it on Fantasy Critic. But
yeah, I mean, there are so many things that are working against this game for me, and the only thing that's working with it is the Destiny pedigree behind it, and the fact that this is Bungie, and I think this is scary. I would shit my pants if I were Bungie right now about like what this means, because all of that on top of the fact that they're charging money for it, it's not going to be something that's free for people to try out when they feel like it. You can't just get your friends to join without making a commitment. And if the game is not getting the kind of positive buzz that you need at this point, which you kind of need that to get people excited about this game, like having positive buzz at this moment, even if there are not that many players, that would help. You know what I mean? Like that would get people talking about it. But like now, not only are not a lot of people playing it, it's not getting the best kind of like PR buzz from it, people talking about it. And this is Bungie marketing. They had done an amazing job right before the launch of the alpha of getting people interested in it. They had everything going for it and it's still not working for it. Like, I think that's a scary thing for it. There are a ton of other games that you can play. I mean, Ark Raiders has been getting pretty good.
People are saying Ark Raiders is like is a great extraction shooter.
Right, right. And what, like, Jesus Christ, like, what an unfortunate thing for that. And that's not free, right? That's also a paid game?
I believe so, yes.
So, like, that's also a paid thing. So it's not just the paid that thing that's behind it. Because, again, a good game's good. People will pay money if a game is good, right?
Yeah, 100%.
So I don't 100%. Know. We're in a,
and even a game that people have no interest in, like previously, like I was at like no interest in Helldivers.
Right. And
then I heard it
came
good.
Out. People
and
liked
I saw
it.
And I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah. Yes.
And then you play it and you're like, oh my God, this is great.
Yes. 100%.
Yeah.
And hey, that's an extraction shooter. PvP,
is the kind of extraction, extraction shooter I like.
Yeah. Where I don't have to like be good necessarily. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
there's
no like, it's not like against people.
Can you imagine? I can't imagine playing an extraction shooter when I like, spent weeks trying to get everything up and then I just lose it all in a run because I suck or like I'm beating a good team.
Yeah. No, 100%.
That ain't fun.
I am not convinced that Marathon is going to be a failure yet. There's still
the
game
signs.
Left.
The signs are there.
But sometimes you do look at the scoreboard and you're like, uh-oh. you know, like it's you know, sometime at the sixth inning, you're like, wait. Oh. Well, they're going to need to play better than they've ever played in their entire career to turn this around, which is possible. But
always
it's, you know,
a chance, man. Always a chance. Rally caps on, Bungie. Rally caps on.
Yeah. You know, like studios have pulled it out. Not that often, you know, but it has happened. Justin, here's something. Respawn was hit with some layoffs. 300 jobs lost across EA, 100 of them at Respawn Entertainment. They put out one of those press releases where they don't directly mention that anyone's been laid off, and then you're like, wait, what the fuck? Do people lose their jobs? And you know, they said that thing about like, you know, we are, you know, slimmer and more, you know, slender than ever. And I'm like, I fucking bet you are if you lost 100 people. This is interesting. Apex had a bad fiscal year, I believe. Also, EA Sports FC had a bad year. And, you know, Dragon Age of the Veilguard undersold by, I think, a lot. A lot of people are saying like, oh my gosh, this is because of Dragon Age. It's not. Dragon Age is not the moneymaker. So like them losing a lot of money on that is not like the big problem here. It's that the sports games that EA makes suffered, and it's that their live service shooter suffered, right? Not terrible, but like, you know, enough for them to be having to do layoffs and stuff like that. This is sad. They mentioned that there are two incubation games that have been canceled in Respawn. It is unclear what the second one was, but one of them was a Star Wars first person shooter that we knew about a while ago that got canceled. They just never commented on it, but they are commenting on it now. And then the other one, according to I believe Jason Schreier and Jeff Grubb, is a Titanfall extraction shooter. Apparently everyone is into extraction shooters now, according to the games industry. But this is a pretty big bummer. And this quote tweet that I sent you, I think sort of encapsulates what we all what the problem here is. And this is from @WormForge. In the games industry, you can make the best Star Wars video game in several decades, a successful live service shooter, and cult classic first person shooters that everyone still talks about, and get laid off to make Q3 margins look slightly better to shareholders. And it's this problem that we've seen for a long time, right? About like, what more can EA want? Respawn Entertainment, one of the most successful studios in the industry. Titanfall the first game sold really well. The second game sold a little less than the first one did, but it is beloved, right? The cult classic, it's beloved. So they can make small, you know, like smaller games that are fucking beloved. They make the best damn Star Wars games maybe ever that sell really well, that people fucking love, despite being broken messes at launch. And they make one of the core pillars of live service gaming with Apex Legends. I believe it has, you know, struggled in terms of retaining its player base to the level that it was at for a while there, you know, in 2019, in the early 2020s. But like, what more can EA want? And for me, when I start looking at that and I start asking myself that question, I you look at like Respawn and you're like, this is not a Respawn problem. This is an EA problem. And of course we knew that, right? But like looking at just like the pedigree that Respawn is and what it has made, every kind of game that you could possibly want, and they have all been successful. And the question is, what more can you want? And this has to come from EA. What do you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, this is clearly an EA problem. I do, like, I don't know the numbers, the projections, what their expectations are, how much they put into it, all that kind of stuff. But I don't think that matters, because at the end of the day, what they're expecting from a company is unrealistic.
Yes.
And if whatever reason Respawn is not making them a profit, that is still an EA problem.
Yes. That's like that's a budgeting expectations problem. You know, a scope problem.
And like, I just, at a certain point, like this, it keeps scaring me about this video game industry, right? Like, is there going to be a time where we have a Grand Theft Auto released every 15 years that's an amazing game, and then a bunch of shit between it because companies...
And that's it.
Like, is that going to be our future? We're going to have a Fortnite, a Grand Theft Auto every 15 years, and what?
I mean, Roblox, right? I mean, that's making billions of dollars off of kids, right? Just like exploiting child workers.
Jesus Christ. When did Roblox come out?
2008.
Oh, wow. The year I graduated high school. Didn't hear about it till 2021.
I was going to say, I never fucking played it in my life. It's the biggest game in the whole world.
Yeah, crazy. That's fucking crazy. Candy Crush, Fortnite,
Roblox, and Minecraft.
Yeah, that's all we need right there. That's the future. I don't know. I just can't, like, because you add that stuff on top of it with the fact that companies like Xbox, even Nintendo, eventually Sony, they're raising prices of everything like that because they're not making enough money. Like, the fuck, guys? Like...
It's like, to be entirely honest, I'm not trying to like be like doomsaying or whatever, but like, I'm just like looking at like what this all costs. I'm looking at like the way studios are being treated, and I'm like, it's over. Like this price increase stuff is going to kill video games. Because if everyone is raising their prices, is Assassin's Creed Shadows worth $80? Again, to me, not a fucking chance. And I do not think it is worth $80 to a lot of other people. Not when Ghost of Yote is coming out and that's $70. At least that's what it's priced at right now, right? And I think if they were to raise the price on something that people have already pre-ordered, I think that would be a bad look.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah.
I think that would be a fucking bad idea.
Unless you got the pre-order at that same price. That'd be the only way to do that.
Right. Yeah. Right. 100%. I look at all this and I'm just like, I think it's over. Like, I think there's going to be a big crash. And then what do you do?
Like, yeah. Well,
literally, what do you do
in music and movies? You know what kind of, like, I don't know, saved things from becoming unaffordable? piracy.
Yes.
Piracy is going to be the thing.
And, you know, this has been like the like the cool online thing to say as like Yves, whatever his name is from Ubisoft, is like, oh, yeah, you don't own your games anymore. Like, you know, digital ownership in an age of digital ownership, you don't own your games. And that's obviously clear, right? Like Concord got deleted off of people's fucking hard drives. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, that's crazy. Obviously, you own a license to it, but and, you know, in the fine print, it says they can do whatever they want. But like, you know, with him saying that, it does bring up that point of like, okay, if digital owner, if ownership is not, if I don't own anything anymore, then piracy is not wrong, right? Like if I can't own something, then how can I steal it? Obviously, it's about licenses and things like that.
Yeah,
and
obviously
you pay for a license and all that, whatever. But the point, the root of that point makes sense, right? And yeah, I don't know what the future of this industry is in a year. Like, because I mean, like to me, the changes that are being made right now are drastic enough in like 1 year. You know, obviously everyone still has the hardware they have, but are people going to continue buying games when the question is like games or groceries? No.
I think what truly is going to happen is that I would say that we are technically not mainstream gamers.
Who, us?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's Fortnite.
It's Candy
right?
Crush.
Like, it's yeah.
Like,
yes.
That's
Which
what a mainstream gamer
fine.
Is. And that's...
Those are going to be fine.
That's what everyone wants, and that's what the profits everyone wants, and that's not what the games that we do get.
Yeah.
The right. games... A Last of Us Part 2, that's an expensive fucking game.
Yes.
I love that game. Has that game sold 20 million?
I don't know.
Like... And if it didn't, that doesn't mean it's a failure, but, like, that's...
This is one of the best... best-selling...
This is 2022, so obviously it's not great, but in 2022, it sold over 10 million copies.
Sure. And so we can imagine that it has sold several million more over the course of when the show came out in 2023 and whatever else, but, yeah, 100%. I mean, you know, I made that video about Dead Space, and it's like that game sold 2 million copies. It's reviving a old horror IP. And EA was like, no, it wasn't enough. I'm like, well, then you should have fucking made it cheaper.
Right.
Did everything need to be reflective? You know what I mean? Like make it cheaper. It's possible. It's possible.
It is. But like it also requires...
It requires the people at the top to understand that they are not going to make the money they're making,
and it requires talent.
Yes, like, it's not cheap to do. It's never going to be game development is never going to be cheap, but at the end of the day, like it is possible to change this all up. I mean, the game that everyone's like, oh my gosh, this is already one game of the year. Now that Grand Theft Auto got delayed out of this year, I didn't even fucking put that on this sheet. Grand Theft Auto is not coming out this year. Everyone's like, oh cool, Clair Obscur. And that's a game that has a development team of 30 people. More than that worked on it. It's like maybe like 100. They outsourced a handful of things, whatever. It's being sold for $50 and is made from people who are ex Ubisoft devs. Because they were one of the, this is like today or yesterday, the guy, the lead designer and director and whatever was like, I was bored at Ubisoft, so we made this game. How is, you know, like are other studios not looking at this and being like, you know, executives looking at this and being like, how did that happen? And the answer is like, well, passion projects, right? Like passion projects made with love, made by people who are skilled. There you go.
Made with creative ways that are not like the highest budget of ways to make things and being, you know, like using the tools to their fullest effect.
The faces don't look good in that game. They don't look that good, but I don't care because the art direction is really good and the voice acting is really good.
You know, that sounds like a lot.
Writing is really good.
That sounds What's like that? A Nintendo products.
Yes, exactly. It's just like, you know, is it the best looking? Can I see the pores on the characters' faces? Like you can see Kratos' like stubble. No. Does that add anything? No. Also, no.
Why are they all covered in shit?
What's that?
In Clair Obscur. I just typed in face models and everyone like they're covered in
shit.
They
get all bloody. They get all bloody and they also like are like constantly just like running through the dirt and there's like explosions and stuff and they get all like nasty.
But it's not shit.
No. Well, at least not to where I'm at in the game.
Okay.
Last little bit here, of more doom and gloom. Most of the staff at Polygon.com was laid off. Did you see this?
Yes.
Polygon.com was sold by Vox Media to Valnet, which is, I'll be sort of careful what I say here, as they are my employer. I have feelings about this. And I'm going to throw it to you.
I mean, ultimately, this comes down to big company buying something to try to get success from that company, and in the process cutting staff
without understanding
what the success is. And like, I think with all of this stuff, I think games media more so than regular media, but even regular media has this. The journalists are important. The people are important. That's what makes a company. That's what makes all of these companies, are the people there. And yeah, you can find new people.
But when the brand of a website is those people.
Right. And I think you mentioned this to, can we like kind of like just jump a little bit to like Giant Bomb?
Yeah. Go ahead. And you want to explain what happened here?
With Giant Bomb, basically, it was Dan Reichard, Jeff Grubb. Was there anyone else that was involved in this?
And Mike Minotti.
The three of them, basically, there was a feud going on between them there and what they could and could not say about their parent company on their live streams. And basically, the three of them are like, you know what? We're not.
They were given brand safety guidelines. This is to follow.
You got to be good for our brand.
PG-13.
Yeah.
It has to be PG-13. And it's like, here's the thing. Like, Giant Bomb is so interesting. Because like, I was like, is it not PG-13?
I would say they're PG-13, right?
If I had an eighth grader, I would let them listen to Giant Bomb. Like, okay, yes, there's crass language, right? Like they curse, whatever. But like, not excessively, not in any way that I think is inappropriate.
Have they been in a high school bathroom? I was peeing. Right, like, I was peeing this morning in the stall. Bunch of high schoolers walk in, and I was shook with the language I was hearing.
Right, like I would not say that they are in, like. There's nothing, in my opinion, that is inappropriate about Giant Bomb. And so, yes, they took the brand safety guidelines harshly. Jeff Grubb explained it in a tweet. This is before it all happened, but basically saying like, hey, my boss's boss changed. Looks like there's going to be some changes at Giant Bomb. And then all of this happens. And now they are no longer, Jeff, Dan, and Mike are no longer at Fandom, no longer with Giant Bomb. Dan mentioned that Giant Bomb is going to be gutted as a website and turned into exclusively for guides. I have no idea what that means for the rest of the Giant Bomb crew.
Because like for me, like Giant Bomb is one of those things that depending on like the cast that you had, it's a very different website, very different podcast, very different experience for me. You know what I mean? They're able to reinvent themselves like what, three or four times throughout their history of Giant Bomb and reinvent themselves.
Eras.
Yeah. Different eras that I thought were pretty good. But like at a certain point, you're going to keep pulling things away and making it harder for that kind of content to be made by a website like Giant Bomb. But, you know, if you keep making what makes Giant Bomb different, if you keep changing who the creators are.
They knew what they were. They had such a strong identity, Giant Bomb did. And I think that, like, not everyone, like, if you just hired a bunch of random people, if you just hired me, I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. We're just hanging a bunch of random podcasters or whatever. I'm like, no, this is the new Giant Bomb. It's like, is it? You know, I guess I couldn't tell you what makes a Giant Bomb cast.
The people.
But I know what it doesn't.
Yeah.
But yes, it does. But but you know, there have been multiple like casts of it. Right. I could say, you know, obviously it is the people that make it, but like, If you took everyone out and put different people in, it is not going to feel the same, even if it's just called the Giant Bombcast, you know? This is a bummer, and it's unclear what's going to happen with Giant Bomb. I reached out to my friends there and just said, hey, you know, cause it's people who had no kind of, well, like not super well, but like enough where I was like, hey, I'm sorry that everything is happening like this. You know what I mean? And so I haven't chatted like the, actually what's going on. I'm fine to wait until we sort of see what's going to happen here. But it's astounding that it's the same thing with Polygon. You just look at what the brand is and you're like, oh, the brand is just the logo. And it's like, no, it is not. it absolutely is not, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a shame.
Yeah. And I think it also is creating this other issue in video games media about this consolidation. There are fewer and fewer publications, places, jobs, voices, the ability to have this industry be what it is. I think to me, that's the scary thing. And like having Valnut, like have Polygon, have The Gamer, that is really less diversity in what this is. It would be like if a mega company bought CNN and Fox News.
Yes.
Like at at a certain point, the upper people are going to have an influence on the kind of content that each of those sites are. Even if their sites have their specific audience and their specific thing, it's still one voice creating what the other voices are.
I also, this is not meant as a specific dig at anyone who I work with, but to get a job at The Gamer or at any Valnet site, because I've worked for three of them, you can just be anyone. You can just be anyone. And that's how it is at every workplace, right? Anyone can get a job. You don't necessarily need to be qualified, right? However, to get a job at somewhere like Polygon, you had to be educated. Do you know what I mean? Like you had to... I'm going to be honest with you, Justin. I don't remember what we were saying or what. I'm going to edit in like a little thing here. Other than just like, it's just a bummer. It's just a bummer that these companies do not understand that the reason why people like these websites is because of the people who are there. And that in order to work at a place like Polygon.com, the reason why people went there is because there is a level of quality that was assured by the types of people they hired. And I'm not trying to say that like the people who work at other Valnet websites are not talented or anything like that, but I am saying this, and I will absolutely die on this hill, that the there is a wide spread of quality that you are going to get, and you never know what kind of thing you are going to get when clicking on an article at any number of those websites. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's just disappointing.
It is. It is. And I truly wish Jeff Grubb and Dan Reichert the best. I am a big fan of their content, and have been for a long time. So I think they're going to be okay. It's tough though. Like this thing about like now all these people sort of like jump ship and like make their own like websites and stuff like that, or like Patreons and stuff like that, which is great. But it just means that like all of games media is sort of like locked behind like paywalls, which is never good. You know?
I think one of the things that's really cool about like kind of funny, I think they're celebrating their 10-year thing of independence.
They, I will say, have done an excellent job at like they got in quick in terms of like what they wanted to be. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah. Yep. And like it's like one of those like rare things that they have a group of people. They haven't grown bigger than they need. They grow to what they want, and they do things that are meant to do the content that their audience wants. And that's,
well, when you're not a public company and you don't have like big execs, and if you are like saying, if you all look around and there's what, like 8 of them, 9 of them, and they just look at each other and like, hey, is it cool with you if you make the exact same that you made this last year? And, you know, we'll give out bonuses if we end up having extra money at the end of the year. But like, you know, are we cool with that? If we're all, I don't know who owns what there. I imagine Greg Miller owns, but I don't know if they're like all of them have a stake in it.
But
in some capacity, I imagine they do. But you know what I mean? Just like everyone looks around like, hey, do we need to grow like exponentially? No? Cool. We're good.
Yep.
And that's admirable. That's great. So there you go. Don't mean to end on a bummer here, but Justin, we're going to go talk about the
just
last
real
of
quick,
us. Yeah?
I want to end about the story you put in there about the Louvre canceling their 3DS support for their Louvre Tour app.
It's ending what, like next month?
And I think that's so funny because I think I talked about this on the podcast before. I was so confused why I saw so many 3DSs when we were at the Louvre during my honeymoon.
I don't know if you did mention it. That's so funny. I'm sure you did.
And
but
I was like walking around and I was like, why? Like, and then I found that they had this tour guide app that you would like take pictures of things and they would give you information about the photos. And I was so upset on my honeymoon. I'm supposed to be the happiest in my life on my honeymoon. And I was pissed because I didn't bring my 3DS.
It was ruined, I'm sure.
No. I still found every old photo I found of a little dog, I would take it. Because in every photo of it, it would just look lost and confused. And I was like, dogs don't change, man.
Yeah. They don't. They've always been the same. That's also a bummer, but it's kind of a silly thing.
But surprising that was something that kept the 3DS going. You know what I mean? Like an international destination, like the Louvre, had a 3DS.
Well, it reminds me of the Wii lives on forever in perpetuity. Retirement.
Yeah, I was going to be in memory care facilities. They have no idea, man. I'm going to be there. I'm going to be there 91, no memory of anything other than the fact that I can Weeble with my friends. And my friends are the voices in my head.
I would be like, did you know that if you roll it down the side and if you get it all the way down, all the pins go down in the 100 pin bowling game? I would know all the hacks.
No one's
going
to want to play with you.
No. Unless everyone else, who's there is also going to know the hacks and then all that.
That's true. And then you all don't have fun. Yeah. You're all just like experts at it. And then you start like a senior senior Wii Sports bowling championship. And
I'll say, fuck that. I'm starting a seniors, Halo 3, King of the Hill tournament. Justin, that's going to do it for us. Just so we can talk about The Last of Us, because we used to talk about The Last of Us. And this episode went a little long. 2 cakes. This episode and The Last of Us spoiler cast. That's it for us. Be kind out there. It's rough out there. Play some video games. Donate to Heal Palestine. I should put screenshots on our Blue Sky account. You can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/shitboxpod. $1 podcast producers or $3 podcast producers like Jay Noel, GKS, and Josh Durham. We're talking about 100 men versus gorillas. That's going to be a fun one. I'm happy to talk about something that's going to be.
Does it matter if the men are wearing clothes or not to you? Does that change?
I think it does change things. And I think we should talk about the particularities of that in there. If you're watching Last of Us, we're going to be talking about the episode as well. So we'll catch you there. Always remember, old games are old.
Bye. Bye.
I'll stop recording.